Hi, this is Kirsty Allsop.
And I'm Dr. Sam Godfrey. This is Stand Up to Cancer, the podcast. One in two of us will be diagnosed with cancer. And that's why it's important that we all understand the science of cancer. As they say of all great battles, you must know your enemy before you can defeat them. And that's the aim of this series, to arm and educate us all about the realities of living with and fighting cancer. In this episode, our very own Kirsty Allsop shares her story.
In our family, there's a genetic link. My grandmother had breast cancer, my cousin had breast cancer, my mother had breast cancer. And for me, I just thought, you know what? I'm going to have a mammogram every year, I'm going to have an ultrasound every year, I'm going to test every single month, and I'm just going to leave it at that. My sister's 9 years younger than me. She hadn't had any children. For her, she was absolutely convinced that the way of being more secure in her own mind was to have this operation.
So how are you feeling about this one, Kirsty?
Well, Sam, you can't ask other people to talk about their cancer stories and not talk about it yourself.
So this is the episode where we're going to talk through your cancer journey.
It is, but it's not really my cancer journey. It was my mum's and it became her family's. This is my sister, Sophie.
I think you always think of your parents as strong and they look after you. That's how it's supposed to be. And then obviously when they get really old, then, it's reversed. But when you see your parent completely incapable and in incredible amounts of pain, it's horrible.
So cute. I know, that's very sweet. So because my grandmother, one of her sisters, and
Cousins
have had breast cancer. The doctors think that there is a genetic link in our family.
And there is Mum and Kirsty and Henry.
That's pretty cute.
I went to a geneticist who told me I had a 1 in 3 chance of getting breast cancer. I thought 1 in 3 were pretty poor odds, so I decided to have a preventative mastectomy when I was 30, which was the best decision I've made personally for me, because I'm pretty much guaranteed 99.9% not to get breast cancer. I don't really have to worry about it. I still have to go for screenings just in case.
Having seen Sophie go through what she went through and having been in hospital with Mum many, many times during different procedures, I am not ready to go into hospital. I felt that the impact on me mentally of that procedure, I mean, to be absolutely honest, I just thought it could send me right out of my tiny mind. The children are now convinced that cancer is this terrible death sentence, because if anybody else in our family gets cancer, or if anybody they know gets cancer, they are going to be very, very anxious. And they have asked questions about cancer. And it's wrong to allow another generation of people to go on being afraid of this word. It should be something that we fight against, but also it should be something that doesn't hold fear for anybody.
So that's a video you did for Stand Up to Cancer in 2014. What's it like hearing it again?
I think one of the things I found most difficult is that when you talk to people who have cancer or whose children have cancer, you just think, oh, well, my story isn't really important. I'm not the one that got cancer. You know, I shouldn't really be talking about it. But at the same time, you think, well, if I don't talk about it, then how are other people going to understand that it's important to share their stories? Because the more people share, the more people understand, and the more people understand, the more we can raise funds to get research paid for.
And I suppose it also ties in with the fear. So you talked a lot about how you wouldn't want your kids to fear cancer. So how do you talk to them about it?
I think this is one of the most important things. For me personally, I'm very involved with Stand Up to Cancer. And one of the reasons for that is I don't want people to end up in A&E discovering they have cancer. A huge proportion of people who get cancer discover it in A&E. And basically, a lot of people know that there's something wrong, but their fear of the possibility that it might be cancer prevents them going to their GP.
Yeah, yeah. It's about knowing your body, isn't it?
It's about knowing your body. 6 months before my mum died, the dog died of cancer. She'd had breast cancer for a few years. And I remember the first time I took her to the vet, and the vet said, she's got breast cancer. I was like, you are kidding me. You know, I didn't even know such thing was possible. My father-in-law died a month before my mum. He was 85, which is a good age. And people say it's a good age. But he had prostate cancer, which was arguably not treated properly. And by the time my mum died, my kids were really like, oh, this cancer is not good at all. And I had to explain to them that we have all these cells in our body, nearly all of which can get cancer. And we get all sorts of cancers all the time, which are very, very, very treatable. It's difficult because it's one word for something so vast and complex. And that's another thing that I've learned so much about my work with Stand Up to Cancer. You know, sitting here with you today, you know, doing the podcast, it's also informative. And the more I am informed, the more I want to inform other people.
The more we know, the better it is, because you're not as scared of something that you know about. It's not this big, intimidating mystery. It's something you can get a handle on.
So as a family, it's believed that we have a 50% chance of having an 80% chance of getting breast cancer, because it was highly likely that my mum's breast cancer was the inherited type. It's been described as roughly 1 in 3 odds.
Of you getting breast cancer?
Yes.
So you touch on your decision not to have a mastectomy in this video. Can you explain a little bit more about why you decided that?
I've had 2 children. I've breastfed those 2 children. And for me, I just thought, you know what? I'm going to have a mammogram every year. I'm going to have an ultrasound every year. I'm going to test every single month. I'm going to be careful what I eat, very careful what I drink. And I'm just going to leave it at that. My sister's 9 years younger than me. She hadn't had any children. Therefore, she hadn't breastfed any children. And she thought, you know what? I just want to do this now. And it's a very personal decision. For her, she was absolutely convinced that the way of being more secure in her own mind was to have this operation. She didn't have it privately. It's an operation that was available on the NHS because they believed that her risk was great enough that it was worth having the operation. So the same thing would be true of me. But I just decided where I was in my life, it wasn't the right decision for me at that time. And she decided where she was in her life, it was the right decision for her at that time. If you've got a lump, you need to know that you've got a lump, and therefore you need to be in the best possible health to recognise that it's something. You also, I think, something that's very important is this thing of people thinking, oh, I don't want to make a fuss. You can't think that. If you think there's something wrong, go to the GP. And if he says, no, you're too young, or it's not likely, or blah, 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 but you're sure there's something wrong, go back.
I mean, I think the fact is, if only to alleviate worry, because the chances are it probably is nothing.
Yes.
But you go to the doctor and it's one less thing to worry about. You can just get and get
on with your
life. Well,
my sister's had 2 benign lumps, lumps which weren't a problem both times. Obviously, she thought, and she went to the doctor and it wasn't a problem.
And you mentioned, I mean, with taking breast cancer as a particular example. So we know that it does increase as you get older. And
yes.
It's about half of all cancers breast cancers are diagnosed in women over the age of 65. But as you're right, there's plenty of things you can do to sort of stack the odds in your favour. So the thing is with cancer is you read about these people who are 100% healthy and do everything right and do get cancer. And that's true. You hear about people who smoked 80 a day and drank whiskey and never got cancer. It's a bit like, let's say, rolling a double six is going to get you cancer. And someone that smokes every day, they might throw 10... dice every single day and they're going to roll double six more likely, but you're going to get one person who never rolls that double six.
No.
Similarly, you've got a super healthy person rolling 2 dice every month, but they could roll a double six on their first go.
Yep.
Now, there is an element of that in it, but you can still stack the odds hugely in your favour. So choice is a principle that's inherently protected by the NHS, obviously bar a few underlying factors. So can you tell us what patients go through when they try and navigate that tricky line between quality of life and the right sort of treatment for them?
I can only really give you a personal example for me. Once when my mum was undergoing some chemotherapy, she got to the end of the 4th treatment in a series of 6. And she just said, I am hating this. I'm feeling absolutely miserable. Masses of side effects. What impact are the next 2 treatments going to have? And chemotherapy, as you know, Sam, is one of those things that's most effective in the initial treatment. And then you go on and it's slightly less effective every time, but you're having it because you want to knock that cancer on the head.
You want to try and get those last cells
that are
lingering in the body.
You want to get those last cells. Yeah. And mum said to the doctor, does it really matter if I don't have these last 2 treatments? And he explained the statistics, what the chances were of it coming back and not coming back, the difference the last two sessions would have made, and she chose not to have them. That was a quality of life decision that she was personally making, an informed choice. I've chosen not to have a mastectomy. My sister's chosen to have a mastectomy. One of the most important things I saw over the 25 plus years that my mother had cancer and numerous treatments, she had three different kinds of cancer initially, and then the final one went all over and it was in her brain and her liver and bones and all sorts, was that she kept herself highly, highly informed. She listened to the doctors. She often took my dad or one of us with her. We made notes. We listened to everything the doctor was saying. And she was in discussions with her doctor, making informed choices about what was best for her.
What we need to do is we need to change this, though. We need to get to a point where our treatments are kinder. They're more effective. We want to see a point where people beat their cancer, but they don't take these huge hits that they can sometimes take. And we are going in that direction. Already it's a very different landscape.
It was very different from my mum first got cancer. Her first session of chemotherapy was very, very different from the more recent ones. So, I mean, I saw, you know, cancer treatment. It's one of the reasons I feel passionately about Stand Up to Cancer is because I've seen how far we've come.
Yeah.
And I want to go even further. I've seen the advances that have been made. I've seen the figures get better and better. It's changing. The landscape is completely changing. But we just need to change it that bit much further.
Yeah, we need to accelerate. We need to push on, and we will do it. So Angelina Jolie, she's one of the most well-known women who spoke about her cancer story. Now, I don't want to get stuck into her decisions, but I wondered if you could reflect on the phrase she used to sign off one of her New York Times articles, "Knowledge is power."
I'm very passionate about this phrase because I believe that it is important in a lot of things, not just in cancer treatment. But she knew that her mother had had ovarian cancer, I think it was. She knew that for her, there was a link between certain breast cancers are linked to certain ovarian cancers. And for her, she has had a mastectomy and a hysterectomy because for her, that was something that she felt would give her a better chance. And that is incredibly important. She knew about her mother. She'd seen her mother die of cancer. She researched it, and knowledge was power. And she went out and she did something empowering about it. Earlier, when we were talking about stacking things in our favour, that's power, to take our health and say, my main priority for my health is to do everything I can to ensure I don't get cancer. And in some cases, that is down to surgery. I think what Angelina Jolie did was absolutely fantastic, and she made the decisions that were right for her. And it's a very powerful thing to take control of your body and say, I'm going to remove this part from my body that could go wrong. The only thing I would say is, having seen both my mum and my sister have mastectomies, it's very major surgery. And I remember reading that she was back on her feet within 3 days having meetings and stuff. And I did think, whoa, she must be superhuman. Sam, I'm the one that's had family experience of breast cancer, but you're the scientist here. You're the expert in this case. Tell us about the BRCA gene and what it means.
Well, that's putting me on the spot. So people may have heard about the BRCA gene. It's the one that tends to get talked about in breast cancer. There's actually two BRCA genes. There's BRCA1 and BRCA2. What they are is they are faults in these genes known as BRCA. And BRCA's job is to kind of repair DNA. Now, all our cells have got this instruction manual inside them. It's this long list of DNA instructions. And when a cell needs to do anything, if it needs to eat, needs to grow, needs to move, it looks up the instruction in the DNA. But of course, this DNA is this long, fragile twist of molecules, and it gets damaged very easily. Sunlight can damage it, smoking can damage it, just normal aging processes damage it all the time. And so what the cell has also got, it's got this kind of fixing machinery that comes along and stitches it together really neatly and makes everything whole again, so the instructions are legible. The problem is that with people who've got BRCA mutations, so these are problems with their BRCA gene, they don't really have effective stitching together machinery. So it's a bit like, instead of stitching it together neatly, they stick duct tape over it all over the place. And after a while, that DNA becomes much harder to read. You start to get more and more mistakes creeping in. So when the cell then reads its instructions, it reads the wrong instructions or garbled instructions. And that's what causes cancer. And so this is why people with the BRCA mutations are more likely to get certain cancers like womb cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer and breast cancer.
So men can get the BRCA gene?
Yeah, absolutely. So prostate cancer is one where definitely BRCA's involved. And there's actually trials at the moment which are looking to use drugs which even target that particular gene.
So are you saying that if you have a family history of breast cancer, then the men in that family might be more at risk from prostate cancer?
Cancer is very common. So you may look back and see what looks like a family history of cancer. But if you think of one in two people are diagnosed with cancer in your lifetime, you can easily have an entire family get cancer with no obvious
Well, that might things. Be the case with my family. We don't know.
Maybe.
We
maybe.
Don't know. And that's what's extraordinary, is that when you think of Cancer Research UK, Stand Up to Cancer, the amazing things you're doing, you realise how universal it is. There are very few causes which are so universal. One in two of us will be diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. So that means probably me or you.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're a couple, one or other of you is likely to be diagnosed with cancer in your lifetime.
It's scary.
And what we need to do is think of it, I mean, as far as I can see, in two ways. A, if you think there's something wrong, go immediately and get treated, because earlier on, you talked about stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four. With some cancers, you were telling me earlier, Sam, your chance of full recovery if it's caught in stage one is?
Yeah, so this is bowel cancer, for example. Yeah. If you were to diagnose bowel cancer at its earliest stage, stage one, you've got about a 94% chance of survival.
Wow.
If you get diagnosed at stage four, once it's spread, that drops down to about a 7% chance of survival. This is huge, and that's a very straightforward thing. If you notice something's a bit wrong with your body, something that doesn't seem quite right, you go to doctors and get checked.
But this is why next week we're going on to how cancer is detected.
And we find out about the dangers of late diagnosis when we meet Yasmin, who lost her father to pancreatic cancer.
It took quite a few months to actually diagnose that mass as cancer, because they have to get the cells from it. He would get cross and grumpy, and I knew that that was just his frustrations and fear. Trials are the biggest hope that we have. To have a breakthrough, even in one cancer, will lead to breakthroughs in some of the harder to treat cancers.
The rebellion is growing.
Every day, more people are signing up and pledging ludicrous acts of defiance. Fancy shaving yourself a killer mohawk or munching on a plate of chilies? Do it. As long as you raise money for life-saving translational research, you're one of us. Let's stand together as one and rise up against cancer.
To help fund the rebellion against cancer, text AUDIO to 70404 right now to give £5 plus one standard message rate. 16 plus only, and you must have the bill payer's permission. It closes on the 31st of March 2017. Full T's and C's are available at sutc.org.uk/terms. 100% of your donation will go to Cancer Research UK in support of the Stand Up to Cancer campaign. Stand Up to Cancer and the Stand Up to Cancer brand marks are registered trademarks or trademarks of the Entertainment Industry Foundation. Cancer Research UK is a registered charity in England and Wales, Scotland and the Isle of Man.
Stand Up to Cancer, the podcast, is an Audio Boom production produced by Karen Bevan and Jamie Wareham. Executive producers Dan Quick, Audio Boom's head of production David Marsland, and global head of content Ruth Fitzsimons.